Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, and welcome to EAN Cast, weekly neurology. And my name is João Moura, and I'm a neurology resident from Hospital Santo António in Porto, Portugal. This month's topic is neuroimmunology, and in today's episode, we will talk about diagnosis of rare neuroimmunological disorders of the central nervous system. My guest today is Jeroen Kirsten. He is a neuroinflammatory neurologist at Antwerp University Hospital and researcher at Autoimmune Encephalitis Research Group at Erasmus University Medical Center in the Netherlands. Welcome, Jeroen, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me to talk about a group of rare disorders that I find it very intriguing, and I think a lot of neurologists are not very familiar with.
Yeah. So we know that inflammation is an essential physiological response of our organisms to harmful agents. Then can we start maybe by explaining what autoinflammatory syndromes are in general?
Yeah, sure. So autoinflammatory syndromes is a name for a group, a heterogeneous group of diseases, and they are characterized all by a dysfunction and abnormal overactivity of the innate immune system. So the innate immune system, our first line of defense, the non-specific fast lactate immune system, and these are all very rare diseases. Most of them are monogenetic disorders, and at the moment, the number of autoinflammatory syndromes we know has expanded a lot over past years. At the moment, we know, I think, more than 40 different autoinflammatory diseases. We can be categorized into different groups, like the interferonopathies, when there is a genetic defect in the interferon signal pathway, or the inflammasomopathies, if there is a genetic defect in the inflammasome pathway. It is the underlying genetic defect that classifies these. And most of them, as I said, are rare or very rare, but some of the more well-known ones include familial Mediterranean fever, or TRAPS, which stands for tumor necrosis factor receptor associated periodic syndrome, and CAPS, which stands for cryopyrin associated periodic syndrome. And apart from these monogenetic hereditary disorders, there are also some acquired autoinflammatory syndromes. And I think one of the most well-known that part is adult onset Still's disease, which is the adult counterpart of the rheumatological disease we know as juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. But I also think that to give an extensive overview of all these different rare genetic disorders and their pathophysiological differences is beyond the scope of our discussion today. And many neurologists are not really familiar with the concept of autoinflammation. So I think for the listeners, we should focus on the more general concept of what autoinflammation entails and how it differs from autoimmunity, which is better known.
Thank you. This is certainly a very broad topic and very new and new for many neurologists in general. Comparing to autoimmune disorders, in what aspects are these autoinflammatory syndromes different? What do they contrast with these disorders?
Yeah, sure. While autoinflammation, as I said, means dysfunction of the innate immune system, autoimmunity, we use this term to describe dysfunction of the adaptive immune system, so the more specific, slower immune response. And in autoimmune diseases, the most important mechanisms are autoreactive T cells or B cells that are producing autoantibodies. And these antibodies and T cells, they have very specific targets. And therefore, most autoimmune diseases are organ-specific. And to make this clearer for a neurological audience, and good examples of neurological autoimmune disorders are myasthenia gravis with antibodies to the acetylcholine receptor or anti-aquaporin 4 positive neuromyelitis optica spectrum disorder. And these disorders are caused by these pathogenic antibodies specifically targeting, in case of myasthenia gravis, the neuromuscular junction, or in case of NMOSD, a part of the central nervous system. And this is a very specific immune response, and therefore the damage in patients with these disorders will be organ specific. But in autoinflammatory disorders, in contrast, the overactivation of the innate immune system gives rise to a more systemic inflammation that's not driven by B cells or T cells, but more by monocytes and macrophages and neutrophils, and this whole cascade of pro-inflammatory cytokines. And these cells and cytokines, they do not act in an organ-specific way, but they target every part of the body. So this leads to a multi-system disorder. And this is, of course, a very important difference in underlying pathophysiology. And this also leads to clues we can use for diagnosis. And I think we'll talk about this a bit later on. But this also has very important implications for treatments. Both autoimmune and autoinflammatory disorders will react to corticosteroid treatment. But there are also some important differences. We can treat autoimmune disorders by trying to suppress these pathogenic B and T cells, for example, by using cyclophosphamide or B cell depleting agents like rituximab. But in contrast, autoinflammatory disorders, if they don't respond enough to corticosteroids, they can be treated very effectively by blocking these pro-inflammatory cytokines and pathways or the cytokine receptors. For example, with TNF-alpha blockers or medications like anakinra, which blocks IL-1, or tocilizumab, which blocks the IL-6. And of course, in reality, the distinction between autoinflammatory and autoimmune diseases is not as black and white as I present here. And because in real life, the innate and adaptive immune system, they are continuously in interaction with one another and they can't be simply separated. So therefore, I think it's better to look at this as a spectrum with a rare monogenetic, almost pure autoinflammatory disorders on one side and the equally rare monogenetic, almost pure autoimmune disorders on the other side. And talking about monogenetic pure autoimmune disorders, an example of this includes syndromes like autoimmune polyglandular syndrome type 1 or 2, which are mainly endocrine disorders that are less relevant to us as neurologists. But between these two extremes of the familial Mediterranean fever and GAPS and TRAPS on one side and APS on the other side are most of autoimmune, autoinflammatory diseases that actually exhibit characteristics of both autoimmunity and autoinflammation.
Great, thank you. It's very interesting to see that there is a spectrum of disorders and that we may be able to target specific mediators in this spectrum, the TNF or interferon. It's very, very nice. So in clinical practice, when do you think that a neurologist should consider an autoinflammatory syndrome?
Yeah, I think that's a very important question. And there are a lot of neurological manifestations or neurological involvement we can see in these autoinflammatory syndromes. But the most common ones are meningitis or meningoencephalitis, especially kind of relapsing, recurrent aseptic meningitis is often seen, or sensory neural hearing loss or other cranial neuritis, or myositis, muscle involvement. When to suspect as a neurologist these kind of syndromes? Well, one of the classical hallmarks of autoinflammatory syndromes in a clinical way is recurrent fever. And inflammatory syndromes are often also called the periodic fever syndromes, like the familial Mediterranean fever. And as explained before, the underlying problem is a systemic inflammation. So these patients often have signs and symptoms indicating a multi-system involvement like rash, skin involvement, joint involvement like arthralgia, arthritis, and ocular manifestations like uveitis or conjunctivitis. And another typical feature of many autoinflammatory disorders is serosal inflammation. So these people have synovitis or peritonitis or pleuritis or pericarditis. And when looking at Tarkovsky investigations and inflammatory markers like C-reactive protein or erythrocyte sedimentation rate or serum amyloid A are often elevated. And this is also implications for the neurologist, because as these disorders are rare and often go unnoticed for a long time before they finally get diagnosed, and this, when they have been going on for a long time, this chronic systemic inflammation with increased levels of serum amyloid A can lead to amyloid deposition and the development of amyloid A amyloidosis. And we, as neurologists, we know amyloid A amyloidosis very well as amyloid neuropathy, which is one of the classical neurological manifestations of amyloidosis. But the underlying problem here can also be an autoinflammatory syndrome. So I think a neurologist should really think about the possibility of an autoinflammatory disorder when confronted with patients with unexplained aseptic meningitis or meningoencephalitis, and particularly when there is a relapsing disease course, or particularly when doing a lumbar puncture, they find a neutrophilic leucocytosis rather than a lymphocytic one, which is typical for these syndromes. And furthermore, in patients with sensorineural hearing loss or amyloid A, amyloid neuropathy, certainly if these patients also show features of multisystem disease.
Thank you. Yeah, we can have like both peripheral and central manifestations in this disorder. That's really challenging. How is the diagnostic workup of these autoinflammatory syndromes made?
I think that the first step in diagnosing these disorders is just considering them, knowing they exist. And I think this is why educational efforts like this podcast are so important, to spread awareness about these syndromes, and because you can't recognize what you don't know. And I think every neurologist knows autoimmune diseases like myasthenia gravis and NMOSD. But these autoinflammatory disorders, these really rare disorders, if you've never heard of them, then you can't consider them. So knowing they exist, that's the first step. It's also good to use this opportunity to point the listeners to a very nice review on this topic that is specifically targeted at neurologists. This is called Autoinflammatory Syndromes in Neurology, When Our First Line of Defense Misbehaves. It's written by Deep Prose and colleagues, and it was published in Practical Neurology in 2021. And a lot of what we talk about today and a lot more can also be found in this article with some really nice illustrations. So I think if people are intrigued after listening to this podcast, they should certainly go in and look at this article, which I can really recommend. And so if you know that these disorders exist and you're considering them in one of your patients, to do the diagnostic workup correctly, I think you should search for clues for systemic involvement by performing a thorough systemic history and clinical examination. You should look in the blood work for markers of systemic inflammation. Is there elevated CRP? Is there elevated ESR? Furthermore, it is also important to rule out other explanations for systemic inflammation, such as malignancy or infection, which are, of course, a lot more common than these very rare disorders. So when confronted with a patient with elevated CRP and BSC and multisystem involvement, of course, you shouldn't jump right to autoinflammatory disorders as the most logical explanation. Most of these patients, of course, will not have autoinflammatory syndromes, but will have something a lot more common, like an infection or a tumor. And you should actively rule these out first before pursuing further diagnostics specifically aimed at autoinflammatory syndromes. And these are mainly genetic testings.
Okay, thank you. Concerning genetic testing, we know that there are different approaches to genetic testing. We can either pick a gene and test for it when you have a clinical suspicion, or go for a panel. Do you think that autoinflammatory genetic panels make sense? And what stage of the investigation should they be ordered in?
Yeah, when considering genetic testing, I think it really makes sense to go for a gene panel rather than testing for specific genes. Unless, of course, from the clinical phenotype, you have a very strong suspicion for one specific genetic disorder, of course, then you can proceed with targeted gene testing, or when you have a family history and the gene defect in the family is already known. These are, of course, exceptions. But otherwise, I would go for a gene panel. And as I mentioned before, we now know over 40 of these diseases, and more are discovered every year. So gene panels certainly have their value. And if they come back negative and the suspicion is still very high, you can consider a whole exome or whole genome sequencing. But I believe it's best to do this only in consultation and collaboration with an immunologist or a medical geneticist, because when you go to this next generation exome genome sequencing, the likelihood of getting variants of unknown significance is quite high, and then you need a geneticist to aid you in how to interpret these. And for example, the gene associated with the TRAPS, gene for the tumor necrosis factor alpha receptor, is a very large gene. There are a lot of different variants that have been described in this gene, but not all variants give rise to this TRAPS syndrome. And it's the same for a lot of other genes involved in autoinflammatory syndromes. And coming back to the second part of your question, at what stage of investigation should they be ordered? I think, of course, a gene panel should not be the first step in the diagnostic workup. It should come after excluding more common causes of systemic inflammation like infection and malignancy. So I would never do this as a first test. But on the other hand, it takes some time to get the results from the testing back. So if you have excluded malignancy infection and you have a high clinical suspicion, I think you can certainly consider empirical treatment of autoinflammation while waiting for the genetic results. And also in treatments, equally as in diagnosis, I think it's best to involve a rheumatologist or immunologist to guide you and to do this really in a collaboration. And these are multi-system disorders, so care for them should also involve different specialties, I believe.
Yeah. Thank you. It has a very interesting talk about this new concept. Not so new, but new for neurologists, I think. And it's interesting to see that most systemic autoinflammatory disorders have neurological symptoms, and therefore neurologists must be able to recognize these conditions. And this should be part of the list of possible differential diagnoses, particularly in patients with recurrent and provoked inflammatory attacks. And as you mentioned, multidisciplinary team discussions with immunologists, rheumatologists, are very important both for diagnostic and treatment purposes, because we have very different treatments that we can use to target specific parts of the inflammatory cascade. And that's very interesting, and you were very clear in your in what you said about this. So thank you, Jeroen, and thank you to the European Academy of Neurology for this initiative, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thanks, Mala.
This has been EANcast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.